Hey guru, everyone.
Hi,
Hey
Guru.
guru.
Welcome to the 20th minute of Awake Minute by Minute podcast. I'll be your host today, Chris, and with me we have, as always, Mike and Priyank. Priyank, how are you doing today?
Very good. Very good. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. We're kind of chiming in all different times of the day. It's late in the evening for you, middle of the afternoon for me, early in the morning for Mike. Mike, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I wouldn't say early morning, like 12:30 is not early morning. But
okay. Makes sense. We're all over the place.
It's early if you're a party animal.
It depends on your lifestyle, Chris.
Yeah, like,
you've been meditating all night, like you need some time to sleep.
All morning, yes.
All night and all morning, yeah. No, good. I do, as is the norm, want to start the show by a weather update.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. But I think two out of three of us are probably happy with the weather. Sorry, Priyank, in the UK.
Why are you happy with the weather, Chris? Where have you moved to?
I'm in Brazil, and it's currently 25 degrees at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Wow. And it's their winter. So.
And where are you, Mike? You're not in your usual Austrian.
No, I'm in California. And we got 22 degrees today and a bit of overcast. That is unusual.
If for those who aren't watching on YouTube, Mike has got the subtlest smile that he can't contain because he's loving it in California, no doubt.
I am. I love it. Yeah.
Ice lattes all around, Mike.
as yes, Guruji, yes. As Guruji wanted to go to the Kashmir and the Himalayas, so Mike and California and LA.
That's right. But eventually Guruji came to LA as well.
Following in his footsteps. But good. Well, good to get the weather update, guys. We're constantly moving houses, so good to keep track. This week's minute, it's a little bit of a somber one, isn't it? I suppose, to say the least. And it continues from the previous minute where Masvidal ominously says how there's something significant that needs to happen in one's life to really shake us out of that comfort zone really is there to help us perceive and unravel and grow. You might say a soul awakening. And really this minute depicts that for Yogananda. So a blessing, but a bittersweet pill to swallow. And it is the topic really is of Yogananda's mother's death. Now Yogananda's mother, Yaya Prabhaghosh, correct me on the pronunciation, Priyank. But unfortunately, you know, she contracted, is it Asiatic cholera? And really we have quite somber, sorrowful music playing in the background here this minute, and quite artistic. And we'll come back to this later on about all the different pictures and the artistry that it's shown in this minute. And it's there to depict a dreamlike state because we have, for the main content of conversation here, three voiceovers of Sister Premabai and Brother Chidananda. As well as Yogananda's narrator's voiceover comes in twice. Really, we have a vision. It's the main subject of the minute. We have a vision that comes in the form of Yogananda's mother in Yogananda's dream state, where he sees his mother and his mother's talking to him, saying, "Please, you know, hurry to see me. She's dying." Is Yogananda's understanding from the dream or from the vision. So really, we'll go into more and more detail on this, but gents, what's your initial take on this? You know, it's going to be quite a somber topic, I suppose, on one hand, but, you know, when you first saw this, Yogananda's really opening up, you know, showing his soul, revealing his soul to us. What's your take in this minute? What's your impressions?
Gyan, her name, the pronunciation is Gyana Prabhaghosh. So that's, I think you got that mostly right. Gyan derives from Gnyan, which is knowledge or wisdom, which which we called Sri Yukteswar, Jnana Avatara. My take from this minute and this episode, really, in the autobiography, is surprising, really, for me, because we have what you describe as an avatar, a prem avatar in our guru, and he places so much emphasis on his, you know, mother relationship with his birth mother, and even more so when we're talking about her contracting this illness, what turned out to be a critical illness in her life. And so the fact that he places so much detail in the story of how he felt, how it, you know, was completely devastating to him, etc., is really surprising to me, because if you think about the whole breadth of the autobiography of a yogi, there's so much, you know, mysticism, spirituality, deep philosophy, and then this is just, you or I would write something, if we were writing an autobiography and our mother had passed away, we would write something pretty similar to this, wouldn't we? This devastation, etc.
But would everybody? I mean, he also showed this enormous love that he had for his mother. Not everybody has that. Like he showed this in a way that this is normal, this is human, and he just didn't try to hide it or anything, or didn't try to hide it behind his knowledge that she will go to the astral plane and it will be great for her, or that he should be detached. He just totally lived this human emotion that a lot of us would have, I guess, when you are at a young age and your mother dies, complete devastation. And I find it great because that allows the reader more to identify with the young Yogananda, right? Because he comes into the world, he will be this great avatar and he probably has all those visions, and but he's also playing his role as a son, as a part of a family. And that way, I know where you're coming from, Priyank, but also I found that part really great because he showed that as something that is human and normal. And this love between a son and a mother is a very strong thing.
Mm. And this was set in 1904 when he was 11 years old. And really that can't be overemphasized, 11 years old. And so it's quite a poignant age, I would say, to lose your mother, because he's really quite attached, isn't he? As Frankie mentioned, you know, he's really, really close with his mother. And it goes into more detail in further minutes. And the backdrop to the story, detailed more in the autobiography, is really that he's, you know, with his dad. His mother has gone to Calcutta to I suppose, organize and orchestrate the marriage of the eldest brother. And interestingly, when I was reading through this again, just recapping to refresh the memory, it was emphasizing how elaborate and extravagant the wedding was going to be and how enamored the mother was with the son's wedding. And it really meant a lot to her. I think she said, when she was to see the face of the wife to be, she would be in heaven, something like that. And it struck a chord with me because I have, you know, other Indian friends, and they talk about the weddings that they have in the culture. And maybe, Prag, you can share a little bit about the differences of the culture of the Indian weddings compared to the UK weddings in Western cultures.
Well, the principal difference is the scale of the event. So my wedding had probably over 1,000 attendees. I got married in India. My wife and I, we live here, but we have lots of family in India. So there was 1,000 people, and that came and went during the wedding day. And also it takes place over four or five days, depending on which, you know, ceremonies your family is accustomed to. So the biggest thing is the scale of the event, I suppose.
Like, yeah, whenever I think about weddings, it's just like a boozy culture. In Ireland, it's like, oh, it's a free bar, isn't it? Everybody goes and gets pissed. And, you know, I'm planning a wedding at the minute, and we're just trying to delicately balanced. Like, you know, we don't booze, so do we serve alcohol? Like, you know, how does this work? So it's quite the difference. But Prink, you had a SRF wedding as well, didn't you? Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, because hopefully I'll have one as well.
Correct. Yeah. So then, if that was if the Indian wedding was a big affair, this massive scale, grand, you know, very lots of ritual, I suppose, then this is pretty much the opposite. It's like SRF, it's the ceremony, which we're going to discuss actually in detail in a future minute when Yogananda marries some people. But it's a very, very, very affectionate, a very intimate affair with first of all, it's very small. There's just, you know, the process doesn't take very long, you know, it's just some vows. And the vows are essentially based on things like the purpose of the union is so you can perfect human love into divine love. You know, those are the kind of vows that we're told to recite. And obviously one of the monks takes you through that process and leads a prayer for that relationship. So yeah, it's very beautiful in that sense.
Yes, that's awesome. And just to go back to the autobiography of a yogi, they used some artistic license in the documentary, didn't they? Because they didn't go into the detail as was in the autobiography of a yogi about this event, where the vision or the dream that Yogananda had it's quite specific, isn't it? You know, where he's interacting almost with his mother, and his mother saying, "You need to get on the train, 4 a.m. train, and really get there." When I was reading this back, I thought, "Geez, that really is. I mean, that's specific detail, isn't it? And hard to shake the reality of that." And we talk about this in almost a nonchalant kind of way, you know. Oh, Yogananda had a vision, and you know, this is what happened. But to many people, visions, there's big questions over this, and in the modern world and what they are and how they exist, but it's not for everybody, right? Not everybody has a vision in their lives, but Yogananda has had many, and they're very detailed. So maybe Mike, you can tell us a little bit more about visions. What are they? You know, how did they occur? Why did they occur with some people more than others? Like, what are your thoughts on that? What's your take and knowledge?
First of all, I'm an absolute expert at visions.
Mike, you're a visionary, aren't you?
That is true. So I really liked the way they portrayed it, because when I read the autobiography, I thought the way they portrayed it in the movie, that was probably how it was. He was in Bareilly with his dad, which is really far away. Like I put it into Google Maps, like, because India, it's like this country, we look at it and it's next to like big China and big Russia, and it looks tiny, but it's a really big country. And Bareilly is like 900 miles away from Kolkata. And I checked on Google Maps, if you drive it, you drive like 23 hours, and by train, it's a bit smaller. So it that wasn't really a quick way for them to get back. So you can a little bit understand, like, imagine you are Yogananda's dad, and you live in this material world, right? And you, Lahiri Mahasaya is your guru, but I guess he didn't have so many encounters in his life with like people telling him you need to listen to your intuition, you need to be always in tune with your guru. And then your little son tells you mother is dying. When you left, she was perfectly fine, or before she went to Kolkata. And are you gonna go on a 24-hour train journey because your son tells you? It is a bit understandable. Like, if you read it in the autobiography, you can read Yogananda's devastation that when they arrived and they came too late, and then he said he would never forgive his father. But that's obviously also something like a little boy would say. Of course, he had forgiven him later on. And yeah, having a vision like that also means what a powerful person Yogananda's mother was. She was leading the household, but she was also chosen. She had the karma to be the mother of an avatar who would change the world ultimately. So she was a massive figure in Yogananda's life, but also for the world.
Yeah. And Frank, I was thinking, you can share this if you want to, but if you don't want to, you can pass. Have you ever had a vision? Have you ever had a moment of premonition?
No, that's too much of a hospital pass. I can't. So that's probably a no, isn't it? If I'm put on this point, I can't think of something to share. But I think it's subtly linked to intuition, intuitional feeling. So it's not necessary that you visualize a scene, I don't think. It's also that if you have an intuitional feeling of an event that's about to transpire, then that also classifies as a vision. And of those, I've had many. And I think we've discussed this in the past. It's just that some people describe it as like a gut feeling. Others like just you know. And others might actually hear voices and things like that. So it goes from like subtle to gross forms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't remember where I read this, but in terms of visions and seeing, you know, future things like this, it depends on the clarity of the mind and the soul. The soul perception, and Yogananda, as well as his mother, obviously had that strong connection and were able to transpire and converse on a different plane than the physical existence. And I suppose for Yogananda at that time, it was a time of discovery and exploration, wasn't it? He was going to see different scenes and realizing all the cities that exist with regards to the actual abilities of the human form. And so it was a real time of awakening for him. By the way, I did want to say there's like multiple Bareilly's, but I think there's one quite close to Calcutta, like a couple of hours drive, but I didn't really see.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure because I was thinking, I don't know, India, it's a big place. Maybe there's two Bareilly, but there's one a couple hours drive. So maybe the listeners know a little bit more and they can share their details on that and correct this. Feel free.
Can I also make a comment on an interesting point that Mike said, which was that she's obviously, his mother is quite an advanced, must have been an advanced being for a soul such as Yogananda to determine to take birth in that family, and no doubt that is so. This is proven by this scene actually, because so Yogananda saw the vision, like, you know, the curtain parted, and he saw the form of his mother, and she said, "Awake, you know, awaken your father. Take the first available train. Rush to Calcutta if you would deceive me." So she actually, that kind of implies that she determined to give that vision to Yogananda. So she knew how devastating it was going to be for him. Or through whichever, however she knew. So she actually enabled, through the help of Divine Mother, for Yogananda to have that vision, which is a unique insight that I hadn't picked up on before, actually. So good point, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all about perspective. And it's not the first time that, you know, we see Asiatic cholera mentioned, is it? This is definitely not the first time. And to kind of similar ilks of significance, I suppose, throughout Priyank. I think it's mentioned once or twice, isn't it, in the autobiography?
That's right. So the second, Yogananda has had Asiatic cholera himself. So once when he was very young, and his mother, you know, helped him to get over it by saying, visualize the form and this picture of, you know, of Lahiri Mahasaya and you'll be healed. And he was healed, which is one the first occasion. And the second occasion was when he was with Sri Yukteswar, and he really wanted to plan a trip to go to Kashmir, I believe. And Sri Yukteswar was like, no, now is not the time. And he was like, no, I'm going to go. And then he ended up getting Asiatic cholera, and Sri Yukteswar helped him through it on that occasion. So on one occasion, his guru helped him. On the other occasion, his Param guru helped him to get over something, a critical, that's usually a terminal illness. You're going to know, I mean, Mike, what is, do you know much about Asiatic cholera?
Yeah, it's an infectious disease that is bacterial, and it messes with your digestive system in a really bad way, up to the point where you are basically losing a lot of liquid in different ways. And you die, when you die, people often died from it because they had lack of liquid in their body, or if they tried to make up for it and drank a lot of water, they would then dry because they didn't have enough electrolytes or sugar or salt in their body. So even today, the bacterial side of it can be treated, but it takes a while. So oftentimes you just have to drink water and add some salt and add some sugar to it just to get rehydrated in a proper manner. And it is still a thing. Like, cholera is not a thing of the past. In some countries, it is still around, but if it has proper medical attention these days, it can be treated in a good way.
And what's the difference between Asiatic versus European or American cholera?
I'm guessing I'm obviously not an expert at this. It's mostly the names mostly derived from the outbreaks that they had. And back then in the 1800s, India had multiple waves of outbreaks of cholera, and in, it was in other countries too, and it got the name Asiatic cholera from there.
Interesting.
Yeah, we definitely live in a world where we take a lot of things for granted, don't we? And that's one of them. We don't have to have that, but it's one of the things that people say that happens to them when they go to India, though. They go to India, they eat the food, street food, it's, you know, different water, and they get stomach bugs, and they kind of get sick, and they have a few days of getting accustomed to the Indian food and water in comparison to the UK.
That is one more example of when Guruji describes the world, he always focuses on the positive wherever he goes. Like, when you listen to Guruji describing India, you think of this amazingly beautiful country, which it is. Mm-hmm. But it's the some of the harsh realities he doesn't mention. Like, he lived through those cholera outbreaks. They, like, thousands of people died from them back then. This is not something he focuses on in a similar way how he doesn't focus on the world wars that happen while he is in America, for example.
Yeah, I think that's a real point. Do you know something that I thought was struck me, and maybe I'm eking into the next minute a little bit here, but we mentioned earlier on, Mike, I think you mentioned it, that Yogananda had said to his father, like, you know, I'll not forgive you unless you listen to me. You know, I'm trying to tell you, I had a vision. We have to go to see Mother straight away. And he was dismissed to say, you know, please, your mother's in perfect health. Don't say such things. And Yogananda really went through some troubles later on, you know, after that scene, which we'll discuss in the next minute. But that must have been a real frustration for him as a kid. And he never mentions that, I don't think. I mean, listeners, correct me, but I don't think he mentions that again. But you could easily harbor that resentment for not being able to see your mother in her last moments. I think, though, he did say at some point, maybe shortly after this, that he saw it as a blessing, or many years later, maybe he saw it as a blessing that he was spared, you know, the moment of not being able to get there, and he was, you know, separated from that. And I think he talks about the same thing with his guru, right, Sri Yukteswar.
Yeah. I was going to mention the same. I listened to the part of the autobiography recently where he comes back. I don't want to talk about this now because it will be in a future minute. Yeah. But there's something about being present when somebody passes away that makes it more difficult and affects you more. And Guruji in multiple instances had the good, I wouldn't say good fortune, but it happened. He happened to be not exactly there when somebody very close to him passed away. I think he mentions later in the autobiography also that that is a blessing, like you said, and I can imagine that being one. When my mother passed away, I went on a flight to England the day before, and I wasn't there, and I heard it over the phone afterwards, and not saying that made it much easier, but somehow it gives you a bit more time to deal with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, it's it reminds me of Yogananda saying how this reality he would see as a stream of movie reels. You know, it's just motion pictures, but still you can get very caught up in the illusion. You can get caught up in the drama of the day-to-day actions, and so it can feel so real. But he yet says it's very, very unreal. You know, the real is God's love, and everything else is projection from there. Mm. So yeah, I thought that was quite significant as well. He was spared that moment, and it reminded me as well, if I can say, you know, what Masvidal had mentioned earlier in the last minute about something significant really shaking us to our soul. Really, are there any moments maybe that you guys can share? I know it's a quite personal question, but feel free that if you have anything to share, where maybe there was a moment of soul awakening for you.
I wouldn't call it soul. Maybe it's soul awakening. I don't know. Like I said, when I moved from Austria to London, my mom passed away 2 days later, and somehow it felt like me moving kind of stretched our, like, we were very close, and it kind of stretched our relationship, and then her passing away cut the cord, basically. And it kind of, I was devastated, but after a while, I saw it as something I was able to draw strength from. Because there was no like plan B now or something. There was like, I made this move. I've put all my energy into this, and that's what she would have wanted as well. So it kind of turned into a dynamo for this portion of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Frank, has there been anything?
Yeah, I think maybe go on.
Maybe a previous life, you know, maybe it hasn't occurred in this life. can you recall the previous lives? The endless previous lives.
No, not. I don't know whether that's fortunate or unfortunate. I'll let God inform me one day.
You don't need it, Priyank. You're already on high speed.
There were a couple of instances, actually, I can think of. The one of them was... we had this really traumatic time with my family. My sister, when I was very young, and she had to get divorced, my older sister. And I remember like thinking, you know, I went out and I just kind of ran away. And I kind of, because everyone was very, very sad and like emotional at home, and I didn't really want to handle it. I was too young. So I just ran away, and I just ran into like the woods and the foresty kind of area, and just I had that moment where I'm like, no, you know, can't rely on my family for my happiness, all those thoughts where like I kind of was turning away from everything that I knew and developing or going down a new path. That was pretty good. So you can use, so it's a really good question, Chris. So you can use trauma to, you know, reorientate your life. As kind of Mike kind of alluded to as well in his with his mum, unfortunately. But also another example is I think I mentioned I've been on many pilgrimages in my life. One of them was to Kailash and Manasarovar, and the trauma there was that it was I think I mentioned previously, the climate is really harsh and the air pressure is harsh and the oxygen level is very harsh. So you go through very, very severe biological trauma. So you'll, for example, I would eat maybe 3 or 4 grapes and that's all I'd have a day, you know, and that went on for like a week and I lost loads of weight because I just didn't feel like eating. And they try and force you to eat, but it just wasn't going down. And so then you go to that stage where like there's no digestive, you know, stuff happening. So then that trauma forces you to spiritually focus your energies, and that's, you know, that's obviously that's part of going on the pilgrimage, and that's why one of the reasons why the most famous, you know, pilgrimage sites in India are in these harsh terrains. You know, Babaji didn't like, you know, call Lohi Mahashai to have his initiation in Delhi. He had it in, you know, 3 or 4 5,000 meters up, you know, in some cave in the Himalayas.
Yeah, it's thanks for sharing, guys. I think it's definitely something that I you know, we can all relate to in some ways, this deep soul searching, hence why we have like a family in the SRF. That, you know, I feel like we all have a similar soul search path of sorts, and we get there through various means, but the tragedies in our life tend to be the biggest kind of blessings. It all depends on how you use them, of course. And Yogananda talks, it got me thinking that Yogananda talks a lot about the emotions, right, and how you can mix these emotions to the chemistry, mixing and mixing with more divine feelings, and they can really produce some great fuel for your spiritual path. So yeah, awesome. And thanks for the Kailash weather update there. That was nice to throw in. Don't think I didn't notice
that. But Chris, you must answer your own question. So you didn't answer the question on visions, first of all, nor on this one that you just asked.
Yeah. I totally agreed with what you said, actually, Prank, about the visions. You know, there's very, very, there's a spectrum of it, right? And what you might call a vision or intuition or sense, and I think I've had different aspects of that. I haven't had a full blown vision of sorts. I've had tons of deja vu. I think this is eerily similar to some kind of previous thought or dream of that. But I can share actually one instance where I was going to see a friend from, I was in London. I was going to see a friend up north, and the weather was really bad. In weather update, 2017 December, really, really terrible. Life oriented around weather, and it was snowing really heavily. And so the trains were cancelling, and I was going to see a friend and another friend of mine. We were going to travel up together. And my mate, he wanted to cancel the whole thing. He didn't want to bother traveling up on a Friday night, spending a Friday night or something, and then not being able to get back down to London or something like this. And so I said, okay, well, you know, we'll organize another weekend. We don't need to do it this weekend. Seemed fine. We canceled the trip, but for about 24 hours on Thursday night before the trip, I couldn't shake it from my being that I should go. And I can't say this is a vision, but it was definitely one of those kind of premonition moments, because it was so strong that I had to speak to myself, say, look, if I should go, send me a sign beyond any reasonable doubt that I should go, and I will go. And I got a message from another friend who I was meant to have breakfast with before traveling up north to see this other friend. And she hadn't known that I'd cancelled the trip, and she said, look, I want to cancel our breakfast meeting before you're meant to go to get your train, because I really want you to go and not be running late. Usually we would have, you know, breakfast together, and we would go on for hours and kind of lose time. So I had that message sent to me by text whilst I was brushing my teeth, whilst I'd asked the question mentally. So it all happened, you know, with, you know, instantaneously. And it, not vision, but one of those moments where it was so time and reality kind of seemed to distort and kind of it was unusual. But that's it. I can't share anymore. And on the other question, I think mine was more of a slow grind of partying for too long. And I kind of thought, what is the purpose to life? Because I've heard it said that you, whether you're looking in the bar or in the temple for happiness or for fulfillment, you're looking essentially for the same thing. You're looking for God. So after years of searching in the bars, I ended up saying to myself, there must be more to life. And Yogananda was introduced to me. So it was more of a slow grind.
I think there was also the element of the question, which you can think of, is whether you had any large shaking event or trauma that helped you reorientate your life.
Yeah, I suppose there was an ex-girlfriend, very painful breakup, I have to say. At the time, it was a collapsing of a relationship and job, a house that I was renting with friends, friendships at the same time. So it was more than a trifecta of personal collapse. And at the time, I remember sitting head in my hands thinking, My whole life of what I had built over 4 or 5 years in London had collapsed, and maybe I was going to return to Northern Ireland. And, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do, so I was jobless, girlfriendless, seemingly friendless at the time. This was before SRF, and I suppose I remember just walking for many hours, trying to decipher what purpose there was to life. And my ex had actually left a book behind. When she had moved out of the apartment, unfortunately, no, not Yogananda's autobiography. It was another book. It was Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And I read it, it was a page turner. So I read it, you know, overnight. And then I realized my thirst to know God and to have some deeper meaning. And then immediately I knew this was what it was that I've been looking for many, many years. So for years, I would actually stay awake at night. I wouldn't be able to sleep, and there would be the knocking on the back of the head, kind of thing like, "Wake up, dummy! You got some work to do in this life." So this crashing moment was that. It took a while to get there.
Awesome. So you might say every cloud has a silver lining.
Weather update. Yes.
We got it now. I think we need to start a game where we bring in any and every indirect metaphor with weather.
Yeah. All the weather puns.
Into our conversation.
Yeah. When it rains, it pours, you know.
But I love that story because, like, I can imagine, like, I was just envisaging her, like, your ex-girlfriend moving away from, you know, moving out of that flat, and she's carrying loads of boxes or whatever, and she doesn't notice that book falls.
Yeah.
And then you come in, you totally. Go, oh.
Totally. To this day, I don't know if she left it there on purpose or accidentally. But I think these moments are really blessed. And I look back, and at the time, much like Yogananda did, you know, in this moment of his life, I think he said it took him years to reconcile his this moment of his life. With you know, it took time to rebuild, and he probably was unconsolable, and he was unconsolable. Actually, we know this from the book. And maybe I was in a similar place. Maybe you guys have been, and maybe so many other people have been as well. But those moments, I look back as the biggest blessings and the biggest turning points, because they turn us towards God, and they kind of turn the spotlight of the mind towards God. Right. So, awesome. Awesome moments. And really, gents, you know, with this all said and these personal moments shared, unless there's anything else from this minute, anything that you would like to add, anything that we missed, we can call it a day. Mike, anything from you?
Not from me, no.
Priyank.
Could go on, but no, let's save it for the future minute. Because it's the next minute goes on to in the same vein. So we'll save it for that.
Awesome. Well, on that note, thank you very much for tuning in, listeners. Thank you guys for being here. And we'll see you in the next.
Take care, everyone. Take care.
Take care.